This is the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Scott!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yes, sir!
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Han Solo, I've been waiting for this day for a long time.
Can't wait.
This is the Bart and Han Show on 98.7 ESPN.
It's 1 o'clock in the...
I just tickle your liver, man.
Oh my God, that just happened. 1 o'clock in the greatest in the world.
The world will never know.
What the hell just happened there? Bart Scott Allen. Alright, let me explain. Bart had to go.
So
Bart had to go running. I don't know. What did you have to do?
You know what? I don't know.
You had to get some mayonnaise or something like that.
I had to get some mayo. I had to get some mayo. So
he steps away and he's yelling from like the kitchen or something like that. Like, how much time we have? I'm like, man, the theme song's playing. I'll be right there. And then he's not there. I see nothing. There's no one on the screen. And then as I begin the intro, his face just pops up. With that stupid grin you make.
But that's I'm done. You know where
I can't even focus where
we perfected this method at, man. Listen, I've never seen a dude order an egg sandwich, get bacon, walk down the hallway and swallow their sandwich before the time the head coach comes in for the meeting. So athletes know like what 10 seconds really is. So when you hit me, I hit 30 plus button on the bacon because my daughter made me some because I've been out doing everything this morning. So she made me a BLT during our IG Live.
That's nice, yeah.
And I love her. But she gave my brother 3 pieces of bacon. Like, how the hell am I going to make a BLT and it's only 3 pieces of bacon? That don't even cover
LT. It's a lot of LT.
Exactly. And it's no LT, so it's basically a BT because it's basically B is just bacon and mayonnaise. So I was like, you know what? She always has this thing that she wants to make fresh bacon. She don't like the old Subway, get it from Costco's, the pre-made, put 30 seconds in the microwave bacon.
What is fresh bacon? Do you go out and get the pig? Do you slaughter the pig? Like, what do you mean fresh bacon?
Well, you know what I mean. Well, she don't like frozen bacon.
Oh, I see.
But she only gave me 3 pieces because she got this bacon maker. She's only 12, so she can't really use the stove all the time. Sometimes we let her do it, but she needs supervision. So she got the bacon maker. So she'll take those regular pieces of bacon, put it on the bacon maker, and whatever, man. So I just made. I needed like 5 more pieces of bacon to have a legitimate sandwich. If not, it was just toast with a piece of bacon on it. But now it's a real sandwich.
What Gracie made me?
Some pancakes.
You want some pancakes?
Oh,
you want
man.
Pancakes?
That's what I'm talking about, man. Shout out to the daughters of the world,
yes.
Man, because we know our sons ain't going to give a damn about us
nothing.
When we get older.
Done.
But daughters always make sure.
Take care.
Exactly. That's why I'm being extra nice to my daughter so that, you know, she don't put me in a nursing home when I get older.
Oh, you don't want that. But by the way, our 12-year-old girls, both of them are very tall.
Yeah, mine is 5'11".
Like we got a front court already developing here.
Let's do it.
Anyway, as I was saying, it's Bart and Han.
You good now?
800-919-3776 is the number to join the conversation. It's already an effing Friday. You could just tell. But you know what the good news about this Friday is? This is the last week without sports.
Yes.
This is it. We're done. After this, tomorrow you have Yankees-Mets scrimmage that we can watch and enjoy. It's a scrimmage, but you know what? Don't matter. It's sports.
Man, we've been watching interleague games. I've been excited about that. Watching Judge go opposite on Holder.
Yeah. So you've got right, exactly. So we've got that tomorrow, and then even better is we've got the NBA beginning their scrimmages, which I'm sure we'll be able to see, and that's on Wednesday, and then Thursday opening day for baseball and sports officially returns.
Do we tease who we got
Garrett
already?
Cole.
Because we've been prepping.
No.
Bro, we've been prepping for months.
Next week, we are swinging the sledgehammer next week. Just so everybody knows, if you thought, like, yesterday people were, like, tweeting at me, like, what got into you two? Haven't heard you guys like this. You guys are a little more, like, angry, a little more, because Bart and I are pissed. And we want the world to know, no more Mr. Nice Guy. Like, we're done with this now. It's
exactly
over.
Exactly. And we see, like, the beginning.
You push the wrong buttons with us.
Yeah. And that's up. Yeah, that's
so
right.
Next week, believe it, next week's going to be a heavy-hitting week as we get ready for sports. Just so everybody knows. So you stay with us. At Barton on social media, if you want to talk to us there, on Twitter, Instagram, and our IG Live.
We'll do it live!
12:30 every day.
You learn about life on our IG.
You do learn about a lot of things.
It ain't about just sports. You learn about life.
Bart's like the Mr. One-Up. You're Mr. One-Up because I'm just showing, like, I was talking about jerseys and jerseys I have, because I'm not a real jersey collector kind of guy, but I do have some that people have given me, some with my name on it, which is cool, and a couple of, like, ones where it's just, you know, there's a player that you just, you know, respect. And Bart, of course, one-ups me, because he's like, oh, yeah, I have some jerseys. And then he's like, and then I have this. And he brings me over to the Dennis Byrd T-shirt that he was wearing that the medical staff had to cut off of him when he had that terrible incident on the field that caused paralysis. And Dennis Byrd gave it to you after the Can't Wait game, because he spoke to the team before the game and it inspired the group. And he gave you that shirt as a thank you, and you saved that. You kept that forever, and obviously it means so much to you. But it's such a one-up thing for you to do. Because here I am feeling good about life. Like, hey, I got this jersey Porzingis gave me, and I got this jersey like Tyson Chandler, and you know, the Jets made me a jersey. And then you're like, oh, yeah, let me just show you this one. Just completely shut down my spot. Shut it down.
It was all done in love. I was the hateration in me. I was watching 50 Cent, so I just, you know, when you watch 50, sometimes you got to detox from 50. Because he makes you an instant hater. He makes you instant hate. But I'm back now.
Well,
I'm back. I'm okay.
Again, it's Effing Friday, and that's where we're going. And right now we're going to Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And let's go back to a conversation that we've been having anyway on this topic. And now I got to ask you, because, you know, ESPN has done the rankings. Jeremy Fowler's done this NFL rankings all week. So the ESPN's talked to 50 league executives, coaches, scouts, and players. And they want... Now, first of all, before I even get into this, let me acknowledge the Washington football situation and what's going on there, because I'd be remiss if I didn't first bring that out right out of the gate. So let me pause and reset here. As the report came out, we knew this was coming out yesterday. It didn't come out until after the show. The Washington Post put out a report. 15 women who had worked for the organization alleging sexual harassment and verbal abuse by former scouts and members of Daniel Snyder, the owner of the team's inner circle. No allegations against Snyder, nor Bruce Allen, the former GM who was fired in December, who had spent a decade there. But others, though, in the pro personnel office, a radio play-by-play guy who resigned, and some others as well that are still in the organization. So what it does tell us is it's already been a bad franchise, and now it's a toxic environment that has seemed to feel like a trickle-down situation. Snyder put out a statement saying that the behavior described in yesterday's Washington Post article has no place in our franchise or society. The story has strengthened my commitment, Snyder says, to setting a new culture and standard for our team, a process that began with the hiring of Coach Rivera earlier this year. Remember, they hired that law firm in Beth Wilkinson, and he said that she and the firm are empowered to do a full, unbiased investigation and to make any and all requisite recommendations. Upon completion of her work, we'll institute new policies and procedures and strengthen our human resources infrastructure to not only avoid these issues in the future, but most importantly, create a team culture that is respectful and inclusive of all. It's a statement. I get it. Yeah. Right? Like, you have to say something.
Yeah.
But Bart, as you see this come out, as an NFL player, as a former NFL player,
yes,
what is your reaction to the allegations and the response so far by Snyder?
Well, I'm kind of lukewarm on it. I want to see he made the proper statement. Now, let's see if he takes the proper actions, because it's about, you know, holding people accountable and ensuring that we don't ever have to have this conversation with his organization again, because you want to make sure that you ensure a safe healthy environment for all to thrive in. You don't want anybody. And I'm so happy that this Me Too movement is coming out, that women are being empowered, because as a father of a daughter, just like you, Allie, I want to ensure that my daughter don't ever have to deal with some of the Harvey Weinstein things or the Bill Cosby things, or, you know, the things that happened down in Dallas, and now what we've been hearing as reported here in Washington. I don't ever want my daughter to have to feel that way and feel like it's certain things that she has to accept so that she can make sure that she can have a job, and it still should be equal pay for equal work. I don't care if you're a man, a woman, white, black, blue, orange, green. And if we don't take a stand for this now, we'll be wishing we had when our kids are coming to us crying on our laps saying that, hey, Dad, this is what happened to me and I was afraid to speak out because this is just the culture and this is what work is all about and life is about for a woman. So now let's see the action steps. Let's see if you get you up that human resources, you know, division. Let's see if you really empower them. Let's see if you can hold people accountable and not hold people accountable when it's convenient to get out of something and throw somebody under the bus. But can you hold people accountable when all things are well and somebody comes with you with a grievance? Is it swept under the rug, or is it taken right. seriously and handled swiftly?
That's the problem I think you have here, is the fact that it's you're holding people accountable now because you're being held accountable because of the report.
Right.
Other than that, what were you doing to stop it before that? Nothing. You know, that is the bigger issue. Now, again, he's not part of the allegations. So, you know, there's nothing the NFL, you know, is probably going to do when it comes to him other than look at what the NBA did with Mark Cuban. And that story, as you referenced, you said Dallas, and that's what you're talking about. This was back in 2018 when SI put out that story about a toxic culture going on inside the Mavericks organization. And Mark Cuban was called to the carpet by the NBA. They did an investigation as well. And he had to do a lot of stuff, a lot of facing the music, and he did. The very first thing he did, he spoke publicly. He made himself public and available for interviews. And he said those things like, he put it on himself. What matters is it's my responsibility and I have to be accountable for it. You know, did he write a check? Of course he wrote it. He wrote a big check. He sent out $10 million to various women's foundations to support women's empowerment in business, but also in for leadership as well as sexual abuse and other areas. So he wrote the check, which for billionaires, you write a check. Yeah, that's what you expect. But you put yourself out there and you talk about it and you be accountable.
You don't
and you
hide.
Show that contrition. But the other thing he did that was very important was Cynthia Marshall is somebody that he hired as he was the first African-American. She was the first African-American CEO in the NBA. And not only an African-American, but obviously an African-American woman.
Wow.
Hired her. And within a year, the culture was completely turned around. And that's what she did. And that's what you have to do. So Dan Snyder, in changing the name of the franchise, under pressure, in hiring a guy like Ron Rivera, who also spoke out about this and said exactly what you said. He's got, I got a daughter working in this organization, so this isn't going to fly with me here. But it's you know, you never give you can't give credit to Dan Snyder for saying, okay, we hired somebody to look into it. We're going to do all the right things. But what you want to see is what you said. You got to speak up about it when it's uncomfortable. And that's about a lot. That's what, if 2020 is teaching us anything, it's teaching us that. That the days of being silence is compliance.
Yep.
Those days are over. You can't just pretend, well, it ain't happened to me, so I'm not going to say anything. Or the other thing, which is, you know what we expect in sports? We expect this in sports, right?
Nah.
Like, as an athlete, that probably bothers you, right? Like, athletes.
They paint us with a broad
brush.
Because,
by the way, players aren't the ones being implicated here.
Right.
This is people in the front office that are doing this stuff. And remember, this is the same organization that, what, 2 years ago, a couple of years ago? Also had the thing with the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Where you're paying for access to the cheerleaders. Like, are you so clearly it's an institutional problem here. He is the owner, so he's overseeing this.
So
and the
watch.
Only thing I would do if I'm Roger Goodell is I would make sure he understands, like, listen, this is strike two, man.
Yeah. It's
like,
still
this is not strike one. This is strike two for you.
It still may cost you a hefty fine, which with the NFL,
it's embarrassing the league.
Yeah, the NFL, right? It's conduct detrimental, so you take that. So you take that fine too, and you reinvest that. And that's what the NFL does. They'll give it to a charity, they'll give it to a woman empowerment group, and it needs to be something that's local so that they can feel it, hear it, and see it. It should be something local to the area, and you know you might have to take a draft pick. right? You might have to take a third round draft pick. You might have to
send a message to make sure there's others. Because, by the way, this is not exclusive to the Redskins, Washington.
Not at all.
I'm telling you, you know it better than I do.
It's not exclusive.
There are organizations
sports.
Where this, and not sports, and not even any in the society. It's right. not exclusive. They are, I mean, it's probably worse there than anywhere else.
Yeah.
But man, you know, that's that the message. Warning that's got to be out there. Make them the cautionary tale then. Make sure you're tougher on them. So anybody else, clean up your house now before it gets out about you.
Exactly.
800-919-3776 is the number. All right. So that's that
ain't
story.
No straight talk. That's some real talk.
Yeah. It is straight talk though. Brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Everything for less. Only at Walmart. Again, we'll get to the calls. But while that's going on and the NFL is going to have to deal with that, and obviously Washington's dealing with that right now, we keep things closer to home here on a story that we've been following all week, which is, as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, the rankings for positions in the NFL. And there have been some that have been interesting. I mean, the obvious ones, like quarterback, we all looked at and we thought, okay, that makes sense. Running back, Saquon Barkley being number one, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And again, this is ESPN did a they polled more than 50 league executives, coaches, scouts, and players to create the top 10 players at 11 positions on the field. And the voters give their best 10 to 15 players at a position, and they take all the results, put it together, and make a top 10 out of it. So safeties were released today. Mm-hmm. Are you surprised that Jamal Adams is listed as number one, the top safety, the number one safety in the game today? And one NFC executive that they quote, anonymously of course, said he's the second best defensive player in football, putting him just behind Aaron Donald. And that's it. How do you feel about that?
Well, one, congratulations to Jamal. Very subjective list. I love me some Jamal. I love everything that he does. He's growing into a great player. He's plugging up the holes in his game. You can see the difference between year one and then the second year when he went against Gronk and he was better in man-to-man coverage. But whoever that executive is, it's the reason why we have organizations that suck. Because I don't know what he's smoking, and I don't know if he's in the protocol, but not all executives are created equally. And this guy is clearly somebody that doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Name me some other defensive players you would take ahead.
You just go right into the division. We best know. Listen, I've been a part of Revis Island. I know how important a lockdown corner is. All you have to do is go to Stephon Gilmore. I mean, this dude is 99 on Madden. This mm-hmm. dude was a lockdown corner on a top 10 defense. I mean, come on now. This guy is locked down. I mean, you can go with some other players. I mean, you can go with Chris Jones. I mean, it's so many other players you can go with. You know, Myles Garrett. You know, the trajectory he was on last year. Listen, no slight to Jamal at all. But I don't even think Jamal is the top two safety in the conference in the AFC. I mean, I'm looking at – and listen, he's great at what he does.
Minkah
Fitzpatrick and Derwin James. And Derwin James was hurt last year, but mm-hmm. I think he offers more versatility. It's up to Jamal to continue to prove people wrong when you want to see him get over the hashes in cover two. You want to see him the insert safety taking the over routes. Now, listen, his resume is tremendous, but accolades and postseason awards don't always tell the true story about who's the best. Now, to call him the second best, you know, defender in all the football outside of Aaron Donald. And, you know, it's a question if Aaron Donald is even number one at times last year because he didn't replicate what he did the year before. You know, Chris Jones was right up there. Myles Garrett, like I said, was right up there. He was a menace. Remember, he got suspended. And, you know, Stephon Gilmore was right there for Defensive Player of the Year. You know, you look at the young Bosa, you look at young Bosa. You look at the, you know.
Well, that's that's another name you would have to think of, right?
You look at T.J. Watt in Pittsburgh, who had like I think 16 sacks last year. So I think what I'm doing is when I start with defenders and when I think about positions that have the greatest impact, pass rusher, cornerback. You have to be Ed Reed, or you got to be Rod Woodson. And that's why Joe Douglas isn't flinching. You know, we've heard.
That's where I was going next. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why he's not flinching. Jamal's not the best safety that he's ever been around. Joe Douglas was around Rod Woodson. Let me say that again. He was around Rod Woodson, who was dominant at cornerback, and then had a second career where he was just as dominant at safety. And then he had to go. Take, if Rod Woodson is one or two, this dude is one or two as well, depending on who you talk to and how they feeling that day. He had Ed Reed. He was there with Ozzie. He was there in Baltimore with Ed Reed. So he's not going to flinch. He's not going to be intimidated by these reports coming out and these other executives trying to farm his land. Mm-hmm. He has a way that he builds a championship program. When Harbaugh came in, Steve Bisciotti gave him 5 years. That's why Joe Douglas fought so hard for a 6 or 5 year job, because that's how long it takes to change the culture, to get your draft classes in, to nurture them, to have them mature. Because some of your first round draft picks, they're going to blossom immediately. But you don't win championships with the Jamals of the world. You win the championships with the complementary players. And those are players that's not going to give you harvest immediately. These are players that give you harvest year 3, year 4. And you look up and you got guys on your team that you're getting the Dak Prescott type of production from, that when you drafted him, you didn't expect to get it from, and it's a pleasant surprise. You can't win by just trying to buy a championship. The Dream Team taught us that, right?
Right.
And we talked about Washington. Washington showed us that when they tried to have Darryl Green, Deion Sanders, Bruce Smith, they try to get everybody. You can't buy a championship. It has to be built. It has to be cultivated. It has to be able to simmer. It's a stew that has to have a lot of different ingredients. And if you give Jamal this money right now, you're going to open up a precedent where you can't get all the ingredients you need to make this tremendous stew. You're going to have some good beef in there. Some good chuck beef, but you're going to be missing the carrots.
Gonna
it's
be the CMOS.
You're going to be missing the au jus. You're going to be missing the Worcestershire sauce. You're going to be missing some of the onions.
That's funny.
You're going to miss some biscuits that you need to suck it all up with.
Oh, yeah.
So Jamal is a great young player. The sky's the limit. But whoever said that he's the second best defensive player in the league either bumped his head, needs some milk, or needs to stay off the weed.
Well, some more comments from other executives about Jamal, who is number one on the ESPN list using a poll of NFL executives. Number one on the list of safeties for this season. Superb athlete, tough, intelligent. He's so competitive and physical. It's not like with some other players with similar styles where you won't play them from depth. You can play Jamal from depth. Another said he can cover but wants to make the big hit all the time. The scheme would matter for him. That's fair. Because I also think how much of this is what Greg Williams did with him in the second half of last season, which made him look like a superstar.
Yes.
You know, that was by need. I mean, Greg Williams basically said, I got to take my best defensive player and make him and make him my playmaker. And then another passing game coordinator said he's the type of player where you put a red jersey on the scout team guy and pretend that's Jamal during practice because you have to know where he is at all times. Now, my question here is this, 800-919-3776. It's just a list. I get it. But it's not like an arbitrary list where it's a bunch of media guys put some stats together and come up with a list. This is what they're saying around the NFL. This is what executives feel about this player. Does that change the perspective now from the Jets when you have a player who either doesn't want to be here or wants to get paid? It's one or the other. We got to figure out which one it is. Does it change the game now for the Jets?
I like where you're going with this, Alan.
Now that you see what people really do think of him as a player, how do you feel as a fan? How valuable is Jamal Adams? Is he the best center in the game? And if he is, what does that really mean? Is it that important to have the best safety in the game? Can we mention all the, by the way, Buster only tweets that the number of monitoring samples collected and tested in the past week was, if this is for Major League Baseball, obviously, it was 10,548.
What?
6 out of the 10,548 samples, which is 0.05%, have been new positives. So the past week included a 5-day period in which no new positives were reported. So 5 of the 6 positives were players, and 1 was a staff member. Those are good numbers. right? But of course, teams are staying with each other right now.
Right.
So you got to expect that once they start moving around and going from city to city, you know, that certainly could change. And by the way, the TBT, the basketball tournament, they just completed a couple of days of basketball in Columbus, Ohio. And full success. They had a champion. They had a tournament. There was no one in the building. They did all the social distancing, everything else. One team was sent home. That was it at the very beginning. Everybody else stayed clear. And it was successful. So you are seeing that it is possible. That's all that matters. It is possible.
You see, a lot of these players will be safe playing sports because it's holding them accountable. Sometimes we let our guards down when we're in our home settings. But
just
understand that you have to go to practice, understand that you are in the bubble, understanding that you have a game. You kind of isolate yourself. So actually,
understand it's a business. You have to treat it like a business, and you can't. It can't become something where you just joke about it or who cares or it's not going to happen. I mean, it's a business, and you don't want to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. Do not be that.
Proceed.
All right, let's get some calls.
Caution.
800-919-3776. Mike is on Long Island. What's up, Mike?
Barton Hahn, what's popping, fellas?
You tell me.
I love that energy.
Freaky Friday.
Jets, man, from rags to riches. All of a sudden, they got a top two player in the NFL. Back the truck off, fellas. Let's get rid of this guy. I mean, trade bait. I mean, this is the best thing the Jets heard all year.
Could his value ever be higher right now, Mike? Like, this is what you do. You want to make a trade. Like you let the Jaguars know, like, you know, Ngakoue, sure. I have the second best. You're giving me somebody that's not the best defensive player. I have the second best.
Yeah, I might want
something else.
I want Ngakoue and somebody else.
You might have to put a little more cheese on a taco now.
Cheese on a taco, man. Give me picks. I don't want players. Give me picks. Let's build for a future. Get rid of Gase. He's trash. Maybe Le'Veon Bell will be good someday. Who the hell knows?
We'll see about Gates, Mike. Thanks for the call. It's a big year for him.
Yeah. Le'Veon Bell walking a mile. There ain't nothing Le'Veon can do at that number that's going to say, hey, we want a guy that's getting closer and closer to 30, and we're going to hold him at that type of cap number. You know, that's what P. Ryan was all about, to try and find a poor man's guy and then being able to have a guy like Frank Gore that's a constant professional to teach him how to be a pro or how to take the baton. It reminds me of when we had Willis McGahee, and then Willis McGahee was still doing his thing, but Willis McGahee had a $40 million contract, and we went and drafted Ray Rice in the second round to kind of usher him on out to get a cheaper, more cost-efficient version of him.
And that worked out pretty good for a short term anyway. Ira's in Staten Island. Hey, Ira.
Hey, what's happening, Alan? Hey, Bart. How are you guys?
What up?
First of all, All good. First of all, the Washington thing is a disgrace. It's unfortunate. The Players Association and the league, listen, you know, shame on the league for letting it go down to the wire. I think the smart play here is pushing it back, starting the season mid to late August. This way they could get all their ducks in order. And getting to the Adams thing, you brought it up. Listen, you know, the number two defensive player in the league, no, I'm sorry, no disrespect to Jamal, but you know, he's in the top 10. But I agree with you. He's not even a top safety. I would take Minkah any day. Matter of fact, if Marcus May, we've discussed it a million times, if Marcus May could stay healthy, he's more versatile than Adams is. But with that said, John Abraham and Darrell Revis were the last two players that you really had a game plan against. Jamal is one. But the bottom line here is, except for the Giant game last year, does he really wreck a game? No. And that's why Douglas will probably do the right thing with Adams. But one thing interesting, you know, with all these contracts with Chris Jones and Mahomes and whoever else I'm missing out here, Jamal's been quiet lately. So even though I think the Jets are going to wait it out, but I think they are talking at this point, because
he's got to learn. Also, he's not helping his cause if he's just going to keep, you know, if he's going to keep complaining. There'll be teams that say, I don't want to bring in a guy like this. He never seems happy.
Noise. And they may have gave him the permission to go out and try and seek a trade as well. I mean, because if you're talking about what your value is, and now we have executives saying that's what they believe your value is, now they just set the market. I need what they got for Minkah Fitzpatrick. I need a first and I need a third, or I need a player.
Ira?
Yeah, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Finish your thought. I thought you had a point.
No. I agree with you 100%. The only thing is now, I think with everything that's going on between the union and the players, if they drop the salary cap, you know, who's going to invest the money that Jamal wants as a safety? Nobody. So I think, you know what?
I think the question, Ira, is what is the value of having the best safety, even if he was the best safety in the game, what right. is the value of having the best safety in the game when your team has other holes that it needs to fill? So I got to pay you in accordance to being the best player at your position. That's what you want. But our roster isn't anywhere that will allow us then to be a winning team.
You know, the perfect
So that's the decision you've got to make, is what's it worth to you? And I always say this. I always bring it back to this. What is your impact on business? Do you help us win?
Yeah.
Can I sell? Are you a marketable player? Like I said this about Dak yesterday. It's the same damn thing. What is your impact on my business? Because that's when I'll pay you, when you're doing it all for me.
I guess what we're asking, what's Jamal's war, right? If we're going to use a baseball term.
Yeah, okay.
How does he equate to wins? Now, when you talk about Dak Prescott.
Is there an analytic for something along that lines in football? Wins above replacement?
It's not. But for me, what Jamal, where he falls short at, is his ability to turn the ball over. Right, so like that's why defensive ends are so valuable.
Yes,
because not only can they stop you from your quarterback from being efficient and make it tough and make him skittish in the pocket, a lot of those sacks turn into fumbles, forced fumbles, right? Or they turn to long down and distance, which turns to predictable passing downs. So when I look at Jamal is great, but he's only got maybe I think 3 career interceptions in his entire career. When I look at a guy like Micah Fitzpatrick, he had 5 just last year. Right, and that's what I'm talking about. Can you flip the field? Can you set our offense up in scoring position? I know Jamal had the great play where he took the ball away from Saquon and scored, and then he had the one where Stidham kind of threw him a lollipop and he had scored there. But I'm looking at guys that can give me possessions. And a guy like Micah Fitzpatrick gives you possessions. I mean, it's hard to say that Jamal's number one, because I can give you a list of a lot of different safeties that you would say, huh? Well, to me, they're interchangeable. If I would say, hey, would you rather have Jamal or Tyrann Mathews? You'd probably say, hey, I don't know. You know, if you said, hey, I'll give you Anthony
Harris. I'd rather have the guy that doesn't cost me nearly as much. I'd rather have the guy that wants to be here and is not going to become that voice of dissension in the locker room. That's not the culture I'm trying to build here, because this is the Jets. We all understand the Jets have had that issue many times in their past, many times. It's not easy to clear that out of a locker room, and all it takes is one guy to be that voice of dissension that reporters are going to leech onto. Several of them are already doing it. I should say one of them in particular is already doing it and creating the distractions and that circus atmosphere that you're trying to get away from. Those guys, I can't have them in my locker room when I'm trying to rebuild a culture.
And I tell you what, man, one name, and listen, like, I like to be the guy that knows people kind of like before they blow up. And I talk about Marcus Maye, but it's a kid out there named Justin Simmons for the Denver Broncos, kid special. And he's going to be a guy that Jamal is going to be fighting with as far as the number one safety as well. And guys, just keep an eye on him, because he can become a household name. You know, a lot of times, I remember I was that guy, right? Before, I was the guy in Baltimore that was playing underneath Ray, and I was just playing and going about my thing. It took like maybe 3 or 4 years for people to take notice. This kid is putting in that same type of work out there in Denver, and with the weapons that they have on the other side now and what they've done in free agency, he's a guy that's going to be calling. So this is what Jamal has to understand too, and I learned this the hard way.
800-919-3776 is there. Let's grab one more. Alex in North Carolina. Alex.
Hey, guys. I have a big question for you guys.
All right.
I love the show. I listen to you all the time. And I wanted to ask, who do you think is a better player, Gleyber Torres or Aaron Judge?
Interesting question.
You already know where I'm at with this. I've been said this a long time ago. I think Gleyber Torres is the most talented person on that team, and I think he's the face of the Yankees.
Like all-around talent?
Yes. I think potentially he's a better hitter. I think he can hit for just as much power, maybe not more, but he can hit for power as well. I mean, you look at
consistent
what he is.
Consistent power.
Yeah, you think about defensively what he's able to do, his ability to play shortstop, his ability to play second base as well. He's proven that he can do that effectively. And because I think he's going to have more availability and more durability than Aaron Judge. And I think slowly but surely he's the future and judges the present.
Strong. I'm still trying to process that in my head. When you think about what Glaber can be defensively at shortstop, back at his normal natural position,
yes,
but it's still an adjustment back to the longer throw. I asked Meredith this yesterday. He has a chance in a short season to potentially be an MVP candidate.
Yes,
he really does. If he's ready to go, and he's a guy that, you know, again, Judge, you worry about staying healthy, but I'm telling you, this kid, both defensively and at the plate, he has a chance to, and he's very young, but he has a chance to be an MVP candidate. We got a couple of things to get to here because, as you know, the 2 o'clock hour just flies by, and there's topics we still need to discuss. And, of course, your calls as well at 800-919-3776. But we were talking about this off the air, and I know we mentioned it a bit yesterday, but now that it's, you know, it's starting to become a real thing, it's, to me, getting very interesting to kind of see how life without fans is really going to look. Now, we've seen it on different levels, but, I mean, we're talking about the four major team sports now. I mean, these are 20,000, 30,000, NFL up to, you know, 80,000. Like, these are real crowds now we're talking about.
You mean axe throwing wasn't a pressure?
No, axe throwing, yeah, you're not getting a lot of crowds for that. So, now it was just a statement put out by the mayor's office in New York City that New York City's on track to allow zoos to open at a limited capacity and professional sports without spectators starting next week under the new phase of the reopening plan. That's what the mayor announced today. So there's still formal approval by the state, but you expect that to happen. But phase four of the reopening for the city should be Monday. So they're saying, like, the botanical gardens and the zoos can open at 33% capacity. Production of movies and TV shows can proceed in the city as well, which is important, of course, to the economy. Professional sports like baseball can be played without fans in the stands. Here's my question. If you can have 33% capacity in a zoo, you can't have 20% capacity at Yankee Stadium or Citi Field? What's the difference?
I think what they're trying to lean on is the fact that the personnel that they have to bring in, and a lot of these teams are.
You can make masks mandatory in the stadium, can't you?
No. But what I'm saying is, I think this is really something that's coming from these owners that's saying that they don't want, because it's a neutral. You're taking a risk and you're breaking even because you're paying people those work hours, the manpower that you have to bring in to be able to manage that 20,000 people in. And you're trying to figure out what those tickets prices are going to be, it probably just washes neutral. So why put anybody at risk if we're not making a profit? We know it's all about the almighty dollar. At least that's kind of what I'm hearing in the back channels as I'm, you know, ear hustling on the side of these walls. They really don't want fans because it doesn't make sense, because now you have to bring in personnel to support them, and that could be just a wash.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. So it doesn't really benefit. Okay.
It can do nothing but hurt.
All right.
Because if you're breaking even and people get sick, then what are you going
to
do?
All right. Well, it doesn't matter what I have to say. This is what the rules are going to be. They're not going to allow people. I just, like, it's just straight. Like, you can have 30% capacity in a zoo. You can't have people in, like, sitting far apart from each other in a stadium. Whatever. Fine. I don't care.
What is this, like, NASCAR?
But what I do, yeah, well, again, you're seeing in NASCAR, they're putting 20,000 people in there. So, but let me ask you this, because I do think this is going to be interesting, and it's Steve Serby brought up in the post, and it made me start to, the wheels started to turn, how Giancarlo Stanton actually might play better because he won't have fans yelling at him, and that idea that, you know, there's that pressure, come on, that exists. We saw it. We've seen athletes come in. We've seen athletes come in here in New York. Look at Sonny Gray. Look at Javi Vasquez. Look at Randy. Like, you're talking about, there are some players who have come to New York and have absolutely melted, just melted under the pressure. You step out on the mound, wherever it is, out on the field, or you're at the batter's box, you know the fans are already on your case because New York is, we just signed you, you better be great. Yeah. And if you're not great in your first at bat, you're going to hear from us. It's always that. And what is it? Michael Kay always says this, you have to have your Yankee moment. And until you do, you're not embraced yet. And you know, like, Tino needed his Yankee moment. He's replacing a legend. He had to have it. He finally did. And then everything was fine after that. But there are some athletes that have come to New York and they've melted. Can't handle it, right? For whatever reason. Does that change? Like for Gerrit Cole, as much as he wants to pitch for the Yankees and wants to pitch in New York and has pitched in big games, he's not gonna have any reaction at all. Nothing from fans, like if he pitches great or pitches poorly. You're not walking off the – if you get replaced, you start a game. Let's say Hap starts a game and he gets spanked. First two innings, he's just smoked. They got to get him out of the game.
Yeah.
So he walks off the mound, and normally you're getting just, eviscerated heading to the dugout. He's going to have nothing. There'll be nothing other than teammates just, giving him that, hang in there, attaboy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a totally different environment now for baseball players in New York than ever before. Never mind the opponents.
Right.
Who could come here, and you're hearing it from the crowd, especially the bleacher creatures when you're playing at Yankee Stadium. None of that's going to exist right now. So, Bart, I wonder how much that's going to change the game. And are there some athletes that are right now on the Yankees or Mets who will benefit the most from the fact that they won't have to hear it from the crowd? Who, Robbie Cano? Would it be Cespedes? Would it be Diaz? Who are some people that you feel like this year will benefit from the fact that there won't be fans in the building?
Well, I want to focus on the last one that you said, and Edwin Diaz.
Yeah.
We know he had the stuff, and his stuff had movement, but it was getting hit. And for whatever reason, the same pitches that he threw out in Seattle just wasn't getting guys out. And I think that, maybe it was the nerves, and maybe because things didn't go the way he wanted to, it just continued to compile, right? And then you look at, the first name you said, John Carlos, he's not had his Yankee moment. He's been a disappointment. We know that they have people that they want to spend money on and lock up long term. Would you rather spend that money right now on Mookie Betts that you spent on John Carlos Stanton and be able to put Judge and Mookie Betts and put Mookie at center and be able to do that? Then you wouldn't have to. You can easily move Hicks's contract, but it's those type of things, and that's in his head because he's almost a man without a country, so to speak. You don't see John Carlos Stanton jerseys as much when you go to Yankee Stadium. He hasn't been embraced. They think that he's overpaid.
MVP. Isn't it amazing?
Right.
He was an MVP. And it's like
year,
he's on the Yankees.
It wasn't bad.
He's persona non grata as a Yankee. He is not somebody that fans are excited about. There's no buzz about him. Nothing. Right. It's Judge. It's Cole. Glaber.
It's LeMahieu.
Stanton is a guy you forget he's LeMahieu. On the team. This guy was an MVP. This guy hit 50 freaking home runs. Like, this guy's a monster. And nobody seems to notice that he's on the team, nor talk about him, or even expect he's going to play, which is hysterical.
If you don't have the crowd, you can see him maybe having that moment because he had a lot of non-pressure at bats when he was down in Miami. He was able to swing freely, and he wasn't in a pressure situation. So even though losing and going on losing streaks early in this type of season, with as short as it is going to be pressure. But if he comes out and he gets in a groove, it's no consequence to him striking out. So he may go there and be able to swing freely and smoothly. Come on, he was chasing some. He had some bad strikeouts. He was chasing stuff all out of the zone. He settled down. He had more plate discipline during the playoffs. But then now you hope that he can continue that and that he can get on a roll because he's a guy, more than any guy in this town, maybe outside of Edwin Diaz, that needs a pat on the back and needs to be built up, that can't handle the criticism right now. And the fact that fans are booing him in his own stadium is going to give him that type of push that I believe that he needs. Now, you want to ask me if I've ever played with guys like that?
Yeah, I was going there next. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Rabbit ears.
Kyle Bowler. He had a lot of pressure coming in. We were a team that was ready to win, a team that had success, and he.
And you guys have the crowd right behind you. Like when you're on the home bench, you've got people literally like
and
20 feet behind you.
Like I told you, we lost by 3 points in a game that he had 8 turnovers himself.
Oof.
Eight. And the crazy thing is, his backup, we didn't have a backup that we thought could do better. But that was the pressure because it was all on him while we lost, it was always perceived on him. And I had a teammate that I actually grew up with. Now, I played with 4 guys that I grew up with on the Ravens. We all grew up and graduated high school at the same time. Chester Taylor, Ron Johnson, and Javon Hunter, right? We all were on the same team. Ron Johnson had a tremendous first year. tremendous, right? And then he dropped a pivotal pass. You know that pass that that guy in the championship against the, was it the Steelers in Dallas, and it hit him in the chest, and he just dropped it. He was wide ass open. He did one of those. This dude went from being a promising star to being out of the league in five years. He dropped the ball, and he just could not catch anything. We used to call him Stoney Johnson off the Little Giants. Like, man, just imagine that as tissue. And maybe like, we call him Hands of Stone. And listen, he's still a friend of mine now. He works for the Minnesota Vikings like broadcast. Ron Johnson, if you're out there, his dad was a great safety during the Steel Curtain years. He couldn't catch a cold. He got the ips, and we had to get him out of there, man. He never recovered. And I mean, he never recovered.
You have these guys, and they'll never admit it publicly. You never, like right now, if you did an anonymous poll of Yankee and Mets players, you will have some who are like, yeah, I could care less if there are fans in the building. They'll never say it publicly, and I knew some athletes that I talked to that you could just tell they had no time, for, like, because fans will get on you. The minute you make a mistake, they start yelling at you. Like, you have the rabbit ears. Yeah. Like, Rod on Twitter gave us some examples, and there's just some good ones. Kevin Brown, you remember how miserable he was with the Yankees. Kenny Rogers, another guy that always heard it from the fans. No. Armando Benitez certainly heard it from that fan. Jason Bay as well.
Familiar,
those are some good examples.
Because listen, we ran out of Familiar because we brought Familiar back and gave him $10 million when we should have been happy that we let his ass go. Brought him back, and now you want to talk about he losing weight. What's going to happen if the weight ain't the reason why you ain't getting guys out? I mean, he making top dollar.
It's crazy, but Stan is a good example.
But a guy on the other side that's going to struggle from not being able to feed off the energy of Yankee Stadium.
Oh, that's a good one.
Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy, man, that loves the moment. He's jacked up on Mountain Dew, man. And he gets that thing cranking jacked when he has that crowd. He kind of walks out like Wild Thing from Major League, man. You can see that little strutting and stuff, man. Dun, 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 dun. Hit the music. Here comes Chapman. He's already sweating. He's the king of the lip sweat. You know, the dude, like when you look up, man, he got sweat
already,
all on his
already
lips.
Already salivating.
And it drips to his lips. He blow it off. Chapman's going to miss.
Let's grab some calls on this. All right, let's take Andrew in Queens. Andrew.
What's going on, fellas? First of all, Bart, that is a fantastic Talladega reference, being all jacked up on Mountain Dew. I love it when you can drop that whenever. That is A+, my friend. Look, I might be in the small portion of Yankee fans, but Giancarlo, I've always been a fan of his. He's one of the guys I always watched, even though he wasn't on my team, and now he's on my team. The one thing I'm going to say is that last year was a complete lost year. You got to chalk it up as that. But the one thing that people that I don't hear talked about enough was in 2018, when you recall, literally almost everyone on the Yankees went down. Giancarlo played 158. He carried them, exactly. And I'll tell you right now, I do think this year, I think he realizes, hey, shoot, I lost a full year of playing time last year. You know, granted, all injuries, you know, you can't do anything about that. But I do think he realizes that, hey, he's on that Hall of Fame track. He cannot afford to have another lost year.
Great point.
And the fact that you don't have the Yankee fans giving him the A-Rod treatment, because that's what he's been getting. He's been getting that A-Rod treatment where, you know, he's a high-paid guy, and, you know, he's not.
Oh, the expectation. I mean, that's exactly it, Andrew. That's exactly it. It's he's getting that treatment because of the salary. No. Andrew, come on. It's fair. You get that kind of money.
High-pressure
situation. The Yankees didn't give him that money, though. The Yankees took on that money. They didn't give him that contract.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's not how fans think. Fans look at how much you're making, and they see your production. Andrew had a good call. I was cutting him off just because, you know, we got to keep the conversation moving. But he's not wrong with what he said about how important it is for Stanton. But the idea that it's unfair criticism is absolutely wrong.
It comes with the territory.
Heavy is the head that weighs the crown.
Yeah,
I mean that's basically how it goes. Isaiah's in North Bergen. Yeah, Isaiah,
let's go, Zeke. That's a great name. That's a great name, too. One
Isaiah
of my
in
the
North
world.
Bergen, when we get
Zeke,
a chance.
Zeke, we talking to you. Zeke, take
Hello?
Us off take
Hello?
Us off mute.
Isaiah,
Hello?
What's up? Go ahead.
What up, Zeke?
Here? Yes.
All right. Yeah. How you doing, guys? Alan, before I get to my point, I want to say you took my podcast idea with music and on sports.
Yo, if you listen to my show over the last couple of years, you would know that I have been kicking that around publicly on air for a long time. I would love to do it. And I'll tell you what, if we ever get to do it, Isaiah, you're one of the first guests.
Oh, yeah. I appreciate it, man. But I just want to get to Giancarlo. Like, that guy kind of took my point. It's kind of unfair. I mean, not unfair. I'm sorry, because he did have a lot of, like, bad strikeouts, bad at-bats at high-pressure moments. But then again, when everybody was hurt 2018, that year, I mean, he did carry, you know, the team. And, like, why isn't that considered a, you know, Yankee moment? Is it because it's not in the postseason?
Well, yep, because it was, he didn't come through in a high, he didn't come through in a high pressure situation. That's when the Yankee moment comes. He didn't, you know, who do you have more confidence in? Gleyber Torres up in that high pressure situation or Giancarlo Stanton?
If I would say right now, definitely Gleyber.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's the point. So yeah, that says a lot because he's brought in to be that guy. He's brought in. I'd rather, listen, if I got to pick somebody, that is long on the list before I go with Giancarlo Stanton. I'm saying, hey, man, give me DJ LeMahieu. Give me Gleyber.
Who would you want at bat for the win?
For the win.
Like for the win. I got a runner in scoring position.
For the Altuve.
For the Altuve. For the win, who am I putting up there? Who is the guy that if you could choose, how far down the list do you go before you get to Stanton? How far down the list?
You're going Brett Gardner.
You said DJ. I think you're right about DJ.
Brett Gardner before that because, you know, he can go there and make the pitcher work. He going to take 12 pitches. Mm. He going to make them work. He going to have
Gary?
A good eye.
What about Gary?
Gary is scary.
I think Gary and Stanton are sort of the same because they're both wild swingers, you know?
Right. And you know Judge has great plate discipline. He's not going to try and be a hero. He's just going to sit there and say, walk me. I got faith in the guy behind me. What's Parakeet Man? I'd rather have Parakeet Man up there.
Oh my God. Encarnacion?
Yeah. I can't say his name. I can't roll my R's, man. I got to go hang out in the Heights.
Adam in Brooklyn, Adam.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Man. How you doing, Adam?
So, with Bar, you know, Chapman, I think I agree with 100%. I think he will miss the fans the most. But, you know, I think everybody's saying right about Stanton. Stanton carried team in 2018, and he had a bad year in 2019. And I think we're putting too much on him too early. I mean,
the question, Adam, but let me just, I'm not hanging up. I just want you to understand. The question is, and that's what Steve Serby wrote, and I got my wheels turning about players that actually will play better because there aren't fans in the stands, is don't you think for Stanton, but for exactly what you said, there's a lot of, if you feel like, and some other callers too, unfair criticism of him, and you point to 2018 when he actually did help the team. So wouldn't you think, though, because you know that still exists with Yankee fans, and that means it probably still exists in his head too, that he might actually be more relaxed at the plate because there aren't people screaming at him, come on, Giancarlo, you make all this money, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but I just feel like the reason why he has been treated like this is because he had such a great year in 2017 that he was expected to come in and had a better year. Because if you look at his numbers in 2018, you know, there are pretty good numbers, but it's just not as good as the previous year. That's what I think he came in with, that, like, they're looking for him to be, like, the next guy to hit 70 home runs. I just think
completely
he came
fair.
With that.
It's completely fair, Adam, and thanks
because
for the call.
Because 2017, he had non-pressure situations at bat. He was free. He was swinging freely because it was nothing on the line. So they want to see him do it under pressure situations. I tell you this, if I'm a Yankees fan, I forget when Stanton, because he's 30 this year, when is Stanton's opt-out year? Because ask yourself this, when that opt-out year comes, would you be happy if he opted out? Would you be sad if he opted out and went to the Dodgers? Or would you be happy if he opted in? Would you want him to opt in? Because you have to ask yourself.
If you're him, how are you opting out?
He hasn't done enough yet.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
He may
just be so tired of dealing with the ridicule here in New York that he might say, I want to go to home sweet home and go play for the Dodgers. But this is what you have to ask yourself. Who is Giancarlo stopping you from getting? Because you couldn't get Manny Machado because you had that big contract there. You couldn't get Bryce Harper because you had that contract. You're talking about the sweet lefty in that short porch that would be perfect for that type of stadium. And Giancarlo, he barely plays, you know, defense. And so now he crowds up the DH spot.
Yep.
So now you got to figure that out. And then he can be a liability at times. And I know with the Green Monster, a lot of people are in left field. So you have to ask yourself that, those type of questions. Who is he preventing you from getting?
Well, this will be an interesting year for him. There's no question about that. But once again, like I said, with nobody in the building, is there a less pressure that a lot of these players will feel because you're not hearing the crowd? Obviously, you need the crowd. That helps you with the energy part. But also when you're on the road. And, oh, by the way, somebody tweeted this earlier, and I wish I can give him credit, but I don't see it on my screen. The entire Astros roster is happy that there aren't fans in the building.
Oh, absolutely.
That part probably true. I saw a story where there's some college coaches that have not yet, like, taken a pay cut. I know I gave – here. Ready? The list of coaches who have whose pay has not been changed include the two highest-paid coaches in their respective sports. Are you surprised that Dabo Swinney is one of them?
We storm Normandy. How you going to short me on my money? I can't feed my family off $9 million a year, even though I don't pay for nothing.
He makes $9.3 million. The other is John Calipari, who earned $8.2 million. Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Rick Barnes, Chris Beard. Yeah.
Now, what you should do is read the same coaches from that university that has taken pay cuts or furloughs. That would be interesting because one thing they say, oh, we kept
everybody's.
All our coaches.
How about this? Two of the highest paid coaches, Calipari and Tom Herman from Texas, the football coach, have not taken cuts even as their universities announce reduced pay for other employees, furloughs, or layoffs. Is there any conscience at all? Like, any?
At least tell them to defer it, man. Like, don't
worry,
man. You can give it to me next year. We're going to make
it look
good. I
didn't even finish the season. Come on now. And you don't even know if you're going to play in the fall. No wonder why these guys are fighting about. You heard Orgeron, right? I mean, country needs football. We need football. We got to play football.
You know,
it's important to play football. We got to play football.
You know who Orgeron sounded like? He sounded like the guy that was the assistant coach for Bobby
Boucher. The water boy. Oh, absolutely. He had no idea what he was saying. But his players love him, though. You got to say that. You got to admit that part. All right, I got audio files coming up here in a minute. Let's grab some calls on the topic we were just talking about, which is no fans in the stadiums. Yankees and Mets are going to play this weekend scrimmage. And obviously next week, opening day. Basically, less than a week from today, opening day, and there'll be no fans. And we were thinking about it, and again, I credit Steve Serby because he wrote about how Giancarlo Stanton is probably going to benefit from this, not having to hear from the home crowd. But we thought about players from the past who melted playing in New York because of the crowd. But what players today might actually be more comfortable not having fans in the building? They'll never admit it publicly, but there might be some that are happy that they're not there. Johan in the Bronx. What's up, Johan?
Hey, guys. Before I name my player, I just wanted to make a quick point with Stanton. He's used to playing in an empty stadium when he was at the Marlins, so it's
good
benefit
point.
Playing in an empty stadium.
Good point. Well done.
The guy I wanted to name, which is pretty interesting, a former Cy Young Award winner, is Rick Porcello. Coming to New York, under the radar signing in free agency, Syndergaard has Tommy John. He probably signed as a 4 or 5 guy between him and Walker to fill out the back end of the rotation. But with the injury, he can step up. If he has a pretty solid year, he can maybe re-up as a number 3 or 4 starter for them down the line.
I saw he'd love that. I don't know if crowd affects him as much
too, right?
as just
he's
talent.
He's from here, right?
Is Porcello?
I think he's from Morristown. He's from out here, right. I think.
Local, yeah. Well, the bottom line, and thanks, Johan. Like again, there are some guys that just melted playing here. Like, you saw it. And I can't get over Sonny Gray. I can't get over how good.
Then he goes right to Cincinnati.
He's great. Yeah, he's fine now. He's an all-star. He's great. I mean, the guy couldn't find the strike zone in New York.
I've never heard somebody openly.
Seriously. Hey, Sonny, like, throw it over here. Throw it here. Just throw it here, please.
But Cashman made it. He didn't make no bones about it. He said he's available. We trying to get him up out of here.
Yeah, you have to.
New York ain't the place for everybody. But, I mean, the fact that he just openly said it. After giving up so much for him, to trade for him.
Yeah. Let's take JR in Jersey City. JR.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Okay. This goes back a little while. There was a pitcher. He was number one on the meltdown list. Believe me, if you see videos of him, it's the pitcher that the Yankees got from San Diego Padres.
Oh, yeah.
Ed Whitson.
Yes.
Okay, I gotta go. So I'll just leave it right there, man.
Thank you.
He's number one on the meltdown list.
No.
You just gonna do a drive by?
He's right though. Ed Whitson was supposed to be a big Yankee acquisition in the mid-'80s, and was an absolute just disaster.
JR, like he's fun to hang out with, man.
Miserable in New York, not happy. Like the whole thing was what a string of. And I see that again. People forget being a Yankee fan in the '80s. After 81, wasn't good. Especially the late 80s when the Mets, good, look at the Mets, isn't that fun? Oh, it was not
Doc
fun.
Doc and Strawberry.
Yeah, oh, isn't that great? And Max and the kid. And meanwhile, you got Don Mattingly and Pat Kelly. Like, what do you got?
You got your get back, though.
Like, what do you got?
You got your get back.
Yeah, no, it finally came around. But, dude, like, the fans need to understand that. There was a time. All right, there was a time. One more here. Julius in Morristown's got a correction. What do you got, Julius?
Uh-oh.
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Big time fan, Alan.
Thank you.
Listen, first things first. That song that you played, Let's Get Ready to Rock, that's EPMD. That's Eric Sermon.
Well, no, that part of it is, but the song we played was Redman.
Yeah. That's right. But I thought you were trying to say it was something else. I'm like,
you said if Cypress Hill. You said Cypress Hill.
No. Not the Let's Get Ready. Let's Get Ready to Rumble part was definitely EPMD. But when he says that part where they're sampling Time for Some Action, Time for Some Action,
that's
Cypress Hill.
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Okay. All right. So, all right. I just want to wait. Say that one more time, Julius.
Let's get ready to
no,
rumble.
No. Who's say right? That I'm wrong. Tell me I'm right.
Alan, you're right. Hey, fellas, listen.
Correction.
Everybody is rightfully, you know, on stand. You know, he hasn't come through in the clutch. I think with this 60-game season, I, on the one hand, think it's going to be super exciting because of the 60 games. I picked Stanton this year for somebody to watch out for. Okay. I think he's hearing the chatter. You know what I mean? He's listening, and he's ready. He's ready. It's kind of like Cam Newton in baseball right now.
I hope both of them got a pair of copper fit socks, you know, for his calf. Because I don't want to hear nothing about my foot hurt.
Oh, man. No, that's a hot take, though. See, like I said, I talked to Meredith yesterday, and I asked, could Gleyber Torres be an MVP? But Stan, again, like,
it's, somebody get hot, you don't have to sustain it. If you get hot and you just get hot early.
60 games.
Yeah, your numbers don't look great.
All right, we've got a couple of hits for you right now on Audio Files.
The Audio File.
And as we mentioned, as we're talking baseball, Luis Rojas with the Mets has an update on Jacob DeGrom and his back.
He came in and got some treatment this morning. You know, according to him, he didn't have to be much, but he felt very loose. So it's basically stayed on the same words that he's used in the last few days, as far as saying that you know, it was tightness, and then, you know, with the treatment, he got looser. So today was like a regular, it felt like a regular side for him, like the same feeling as throwing the ball as usual. I think he threw 17 pitches in the bullpen, felt good. So we're going to have him Sunday. You know, we're hoping for a live, you know, BP sim game, you know, here for a stay back crew, maybe in the 50, 60 pitch mark, something like that. So that's what we're hoping for Sunday.
All right. So you won't see DeGrom against the Yankees in the scrimmages, but sounds like he is on track, though, to be there a week from today for opening day for the Mets against the Braves.
Just back tightness, man. Get that worked out. Oh,
come on.
Out.
Like I said,
I wasn't concerned with it.
Was there ever a time you're like, I forgot he had a back issue? He never, ever. Once his little back issue,
low back early when you start early and trying to get back to like action. I worry about hamstrings and calves because those don't go away. Those take 6 to 8 months and 6 to 8 weeks, and you usually don't have the time to rest that long. A back can just be something like a little tightness in his hamstring or something like that. You know, so I'm not concerned with DeGrom. DeGrom's gonna do what DeGrom does. He's gonna come out and he's gonna be in the conversation, you know, for all the postseason awards, and he's going for his third in a row. We know what we're talking about, and it'd be interesting to see who's the best pitcher in New York, Gerrit Cole or Jacob DeGrom, because right now it's DeGrom's to lose.
It's gonna be a fun rivalry. There's no question. It is gonna be a fun rivalry. Before we go on to the next one, John on Twitter wants me to know, you got Ricky Henderson, you got Willie Randolph, Don Mattingly, Dave Winfield, Mike Pagliarulo, Pags, Dave Rigetti, Ron Guidry, the 80s Yankees won more games between 80 and 89. If there was a wild card then, John, I lived it. Okay. Yeah, did they finish second in the division a couple of times? Did they finish second in the division a couple of times, which was painful? Yes. But they were like 500. You know, they had a losing record at least twice in the decade that I can remember. But they were barely over 500. Were they competitive? Yes. Now, back then, the division winner was the only one that advanced. I understand that part of it. But if you're telling me that it was great to be a Yankee fan in the 80s because they never made the playoffs after 81, stop it. While the Mets were making the playoffs and winning championships? Come on, man. Like, I lived it. Drove me nuts. Yes. And by the way, the team you're describing was the early 80s team. Late 80s? Wasn't this pretty? All right, trust me. All right, next up, out of baseball. Moving on now to the story we led with, which is a big story in sports right now. The Washington football team and the report out of the Washington Post with allegations about sexual misconduct in that organization, and Dan Snyder, the owner of the team, putting out a statement, and they're having an independent investigation now into all of this. Liz Clark, who's a reporter for the Washington Post, one of the reporters that put out this report, was on Spain and Company and talks about what this story tells you about the Washington football team.
And in our story, although it's about the experience of 15 young women being harassed, there's also cases of male employees being sort of debased and humiliated, is how I would put it. We felt there was a real strong thread there of young women either being sexually harassed, receiving unwelcome overtures, or on the marketing side of the team, and this is what echoes the cheerleader's story, being expected or told or urged to wear tight-fitting clothes, and in one case, you know, an offer from a boss to hook a young woman up with breast augmentation. And this comes from above. I mean, this is a story in which three employees of the team have lost their jobs. I think there's a much deeper story here about a culture. These events, these experiences happened over 13 years.
Bar, you and I are both parents of girls, right?
Yep.
So we're dads, we're girl dads. And in today's world, and we've talked about this when it comes to racial relations, and I've said this, you know, white people have to speak up when there's something that you know is wrong. And, you know, it's only white people around, so, oh, it's fine, right? No, it's not anymore. It's the same thing in this case. When men are around men and you see this happening, it's, you know, silence is compliance.
Check
it out. You gotta be the one that's, I don't want this type of environment. I don't want to be around this because if I say nothing,
yeah,
I'm part of it. So I got to get out of there,
yeah,
and I got to, and if I'm in a position of leadership,
yeah,
I got to put a stop to this because this is how you destroy a company, a business. This is not the way you should represent yourself, and nor if you're the NFL, you don't want this because you know there's other teams where this might be going on at a smaller scale, and they better snuff it out quick.
And that's what you have to do. We have to hold each other accountable. Not saying anything is being complicit. You got to step out there. You put that guy to the side. If he is a guy above you, it don't matter. Be a man. Say, listen, man, I'm not cool with that. I got daughters. You need to cut that out, bro. You need to go apologize to her. And if you don't, you know what I'm saying, you know, we're going to have an issue around here. There's going to be a problem. And then it's going to come to a point where they're either going to have to pick you or pick me. And then I'm going to make sure that I make it known why they picked you, if that's the case. You got to hold people accountable. You got to hold your friends accountable, too. That's how we stop it. It's peer pressure. It's not being worried about some woman standing up for herself and happening to be in a confrontation with a man. No, it's up for men in this environment to be men. Be a man.
Great
a man.
Point.
That's what we're supposed
to
be.
It. Yeah.
Check yourself, fool, or I'm going to check you for you.
Last but not least, so Zion Williamson left the NBA bubble as a family issue. And again, like I said, we certainly hope it's a family emergency, actually, and we're hoping everything will be okay. Upon his return, he's going to have to go through quarantine, of course. But the fact that the NBA opened up the 22 teams, a lot of it had to do with the fact they wanted the Pelicans involved. They wanted Zion involved in the restart in some way, somehow. And we've seen some pictures of him with talk around him. There's a lot of excitement about how he used the pandemic and the shutdown to get his body into great shape. And Andrew Lopez, who's an ESPN NBA reporter covering the Pelicans, was on Golic and Wingo talking about how Zion might have gotten stronger.
The Pels have always been good with him being around 280, 285. They said earlier on that's how he became so dominant, is playing around at that weight. And they were just worried about his joints, his flexibility, and things like that. But I don't even think he really lost a lot of weight. I think a lot of it just, he turned a lot more in the muscle during the break. So I still think he's probably around that 275 mark. And I think they just want him to be leaner and take as much pressure off of his joints as possible. As long as he has this flexibility that they want, they're okay with him being there. But during that process of quarantine, where he was able to come back looking shredded as possible, I think, you know, the team kind of maybe wanted him to stay healthy, and he just showed up looking like that.
He's such a compelling athlete to just see what can he become, right? I think that's the most incredible thing about him, is what can he become?
Yeah. He reminds me of Charles. Now, of course, he has more bounce than Charles, but he reminds me of Charles, early Charles, you know, the Philadelphia Sixers Charles, the one that was in shape, the best shape of his life. Now, we know the longer he played, the less shape he remained to be in.
It's a different kind
still,
of shape.
But he was still dominant. You know, when I look at Zion, he lost at least 10 pounds. I know muscle weighs more, but, you know, fat takes up a lot of surface area, and the fact that he looks so drawn in, he didn't add bulk and muscle. He looks right. Like he got smaller, just like Carmelo. Carmelo looked like he's strong, like lean. somebody put him in a dryer on high heat, and he would have a little nylon and polyester, yeah, and it sucked him in. So he looks like that. He don't look like he put like muscle where he looks bulky or cut up, or he don't look like a Aroldis Chapman. Let's say that.
Yeah, he's not all yoked up. All right, so a couple of things. First of all, I did tease that we were going to fight over LeBron. We are going to push that to next week now. All right, we're going to do all that next week.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
No. There's a lot. We just didn't have time today, and we need time to fight over this.
You just need a weekend to get some more research, get some more ammunition. That's what that's all about.
Maybe. That's possible, because it's not easy for me. But no, that's going to be something we're going to get into next week. Again, next week now, that's it. This is the last full week without sports. This weekend, we've got plenty to watch, and then starting Wednesday, you've got NBA scrimmages, and then Thursday, opening day in baseball, where those games actually count. And then the week after that, forget it. We're going to have everything. Hockey. We were concerned about the start of the football training camp time, which is getting close. Is this time of year, do you start to get itchy, like you feel like you're... Like, does your body, have you been retired long enough now where your body doesn't feel like, I should be getting ready for something?
No, I do. And I look at my heel, and I work out hard for a couple of days, and I'm like, you know what? Nah, I'm good. It's like, I'm straight.
Your body, then your joints say, what are you doing?
Because you have to take your body through, like, the part of the process is hurting and getting comfortable with hurting and then healing up and then hurting. That's the process of training. Then your feet hurt, your ankles hurt, your toes hurt.
Being uncomfortable, yeah.
Exactly. And I like being comfortable.
John Pelissero tweets that DeMar Smith, the NFLPA executive director, was on a media conference call and said that union officials had a call last night with team doctors. And those team doctors gave an opinion with a couple of reservations that it's safe to open training camp. Is that a win? Is that something now to feel like, okay.
That's progress.
Get ready for business.
That's progress, but from what I know.
Oh, don't give me the butt. Don't do the butt thing.
But see, when you say the butt.
When you use butt, you set me up for the butt.
He just set me up for the butt.
For my brother, my butt.
what I'm saying is, like, the NFLPA is worried about protecting their players, and also you hear the things coming out about 40% of the salary cap and all that type of stuff and escrow, some things that still need to be ironed out before you can put any of your members out there. And, you know, the NFL, like most sports and like most things, deadline forces action, and it's no deadlines really that they're hard up against. And I think the union wants to start the season in October. And to do that, you got to delay a little bit.
Why do they want to start in October, though?
They just want to make sure and look at what's going on with other athletes and other sports that's starting.
So you want to see the NBA, NHL,
the impact,
baseball.
Yeah, just what happens. Because what happens is whatever happens to them. It's kind of like how the NFL is New York. The NBA, MLB, they're New York. And the NFL is Texas and Florida. And they have opportunity to watch the other sports and see how how they react and how they handle situations and what's the best protocol, because they have proof of process by that way, by watching them. Even though they're not in a bubble, you're going to be able to watch the NHL. You're going to be able to watch the other sports and see how they handle and see what happens, because whatever the numbers are on those sports, you can bet that they're going to be double or maybe triple, because they don't have the pure numbers that the NFL is going to have to try and navigate with, because they have more people on the team.
Way
than
more
other
athletes
sports.
Out there. Yeah.
Right.
No, that's a good point. It's a lot more players that you have to keep track of and check and test and all that stuff on a daily basis. And they will be traveling as well. So, yeah, I guess you don't want to just rush into it, right? But coaches and teams, and obviously the NFL as a league for the business, they want to get this thing going.
They got old-ass coaches, too.
So we have a weekend, Bart, where we actually will have some action. These games don't count, but you do have Mets-Yankees now that'll play each other. And the Saturday
night
game.
Who are you most excited to see?
SNY, yes, and ESPN. Well,
who are you most excited to see?
I've been watching their scrimmage, their own scrimmages, so I've seen everyone. But
it's different.
You're tuning in, though, right? 7 o'clock Saturday, you're tuning in.
It's different because it's different. I want to see Cespedes go against some real live ace-type pitching and see if Cespedes really is back. Should I be really excited about him being a DH? He looks great, but he knows these pitchers. He knows their tendencies. I want to see him go against an opposing jersey and see if he's really back.
I want to see Judge continue to do what we've seen these last couple of days. You know, that's what I want to see, obviously, how they use the pitching. These
I want
are just
to see Andujar in outfield. I want to see Andujar in outfield.
Yeah. It's a lot. Look, it's exciting. It's funny. These games aren't going to count, and yet we're going to be tuned in. I know I will. Finally, sports
they
in the
don't
back.
Count,
K-Show
they
next, Bart. Have a good weekend.
Holla.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays from 1 to 3 on 98.7 ESPN.